The Recap Show is an inside look for fans into the world of global soccer, women's sports, and all things gal culture.
From the inside perspective of two World Cup champions and Olympians.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, well, guess who's here? We are here. My name is Johnny Rabbit. We're on KMOX, and what a beautiful sunrise this morning. And there, right almost before my very eyes, our very first early bird guest. It's noted architect, author, lecturer, bon vivant, John Gunther. Welcome, John Gunther. How are you?
I'm great. Good morning. Great to be with you.
And it's good to have you. Well, now, have you already had a giant breakfast, or is that yet to come?
Yet to come.
Okay. Now, you've created a number of things, including two really of the best books ever, I think, about St. Louis. And there have been a lot of books about St. Louis and our history. Now, there's The Gateway Arch, An Illustrated Timeline. When did that come out, John?
That came out in 2023.
Mm-hmm. And it's still available.
Yes, absolutely. It's printed by Reedy Press and very much available. Thank you.
Oh, that's great. And it is, they call it a book zine. What does that mean?
Well, it is a timeline, an illustrated timeline of important events that occurred throughout the founding and creation of the Gateway Arch. So there's 90 historical events. And it's formatted such that it has illustrations along with a brief description of the event. So it's easy to read and gives you great oversight very quickly.
Sure. And where did the pictures, you have so many pictures, where do they come from?
It comes from a wide range, from research, from various institutions, as well as my own personal photographs.
So you go out and take photographs? You have a special camera for that?
I have several cameras, but I have to tell you, the iPhone does an amazing job.
Oh, it really does. It's pretty darn amazing. You're right. And now there's another book. These are really great for anybody who collects books about St. Louis. And this is the newest one. This one is The Cathedral Basilica of St. Louis. Now, both of these books are magnificent, and they're about magnificent structures of the 20th century. So now what are we going to find in the Cathedral Basilica of St. Louis? There have been other books that relate to the cathedral, but this is different.
Yes, this is one that really pulls a lot of things together. There have been numerous books written, and they focus on different points in time and lead up to certain points in time, but this is a story that's 352 years in the making, and I begin in 1673 with Marquette and Joliet coming down the Mississippi mm-hmm. River, and we conclude in 2025 with the latest refinements to the Cathedral Basilica, as well as the elevation of Robert Francis Prevost as Pope Leo XIV. So it's a very complete history. It's really the story of St. Louis and its founding, as well as the establishment of the old cathedral and the new cathedral. And it has 138 key moments in time.
That's amazing. What about Pope Leo? Does he have a copy of the book?
He does, as a matter of fact. We mailed him a copy and received a very nice thank you letter.
That's nice.
From, yes, uh-huh, yes.
Hey, how did it come about that you were the person to really document the stories and history of the cathedral and the arch?
Well, I've been, as an architect for 50 years, I've also been very, very fascinated about the history of St. Louis and the great architecture that we have here. And so I was approached first about the Gateway Arch by Reedy Press to ask if I would prepare a book on this, which I gladly said yes. It is one of the great iconic buildings and memorials and monuments in the entire world. And upon that completion, they asked if I would consider writing a book on the Cathedral Basilica of St. Louis. And I've admired this magnificent structure for so many years that I said yes again. And it's been a wonderful, wonderful journey to convey information and knowledge that I've gained over the years, as well as to continue learning myself. Lifelong learning is really important.
Isn't that the truth? I know you really came up with a lot of behind-the-scenes stories about both structures as you were doing your research. Now, as far as the arch is concerned, How did the shape of the legs change in the over the design period before it started going up?
Well, it's fascinating because the very first design that Eero Saarinen came up with, the idea was solid from the very beginning as the gateway to the West. But the very first design was a decidedly different proportion. It was 556 feet high and 700 feet wide, so much wider than tall. As we know, it has evolved into the 630 feet in width and height. And the other key moment in time was the decision to go from square cross sections for the legs to triangular cross sections of the legs. It becomes a much, much more beautiful sculptural effect with the triangular legs catching the light as it does.
Well, was it Eero Saarinen who came up with the triangular leg idea, or would someone help him?
Actually, he was at Cranbrook Academy of Art and near Detroit, and Carl Millis, the sculptor in residence there, passed by his desk and saw the square sections of the legs, and he said, "Eero, you really need to consider a triangular leg. It will be much more beautiful and sculptural," and indeed it is.
Well, Carl Millis, that's a familiar name to St. Louis.
It is. He has designed the Meeting of the Rivers, the fountain in front of Union Station, a really beautiful, beautiful fountain there, and its sculpture, as well as the sculpture in front of the Climatron at the Botanical Gardens, the three angels with musical instruments.
Oh, yeah.
So his effect, his impact has been strongly felt here.
And the Meeting of the Waters originally was named the Wedding of the Waters.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people said, well, that's too risque, and all those nude figures in there. Some people wanted to put clothes in the figures. That didn't happen, of course. To date, what's in some of the things that you feel are the importance of the Gateway Arch to the city of St. Louis, besides looking beautiful?
Well, it is so elegant. It symbolizes the gateway to the West and frames our city so beautifully in any direction you look. But its relationship with the old courthouse is magnificent as it frames that as we look at the old courthouse looking to the east. And as certainly when you cross the bridge, when you come across the river and look over, it's an awe-inspiring sight.
It is. It always is. I saw it this morning, and a really wonderful, wonderful sunrise coming up right behind the arch. Now, what about the Riverfront Memorial? When did that all start? I mean, it just let's put an arch down here. There was a lot of work that went down there on the levee and up to really what we call Memorial Drive today. How did that all come about? When did it start?
Well, it actually began December 15th of 1933 when a committee was established by Mayor Dickman to look into establishing a federal memorial. And that idea sprang forth from Luther Eli Smith, a St. Louis attorney and civic leader. And he was passing by, he was returning from a trip to the east, and he was on the train passing by the riverfront, and he thought it looked a little bit run down. And what about re-envisioning that area to create a national memorial to Thomas Jefferson and the expansion of the country to the west?
And we have a park named for Luther Ely Smith.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Right downtown, right there, adjacent to the old courthouse. Oh, wait, the old courthouse. You're going to be there today, aren't you?
Yes, I will. Yes, from 2 to 3, I'm giving a talk on the Gateway Arch, the book, in the old courthouse today.
So where would you just come to the old courthouse and you'll be in what room or what area?
I would just say come on in and ask anyone in there. I believe we're going to be in the rotunda, but I'll wait and see.
That'd be great. Probably a great acoustics in that rotunda.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Did you ever go up into the top of the old courthouse and the dome?
I've not had that privilege, but maybe someday.
It is most interesting. I did a feature on. I used to do a show with first John Pertzborn and then Dan Buck and Channel 5 called Johnny Rabbit's Unusual St. Louis. And we got up into the dome of the cathedral and the old courthouse. One of the interesting things at the old courthouse, it's like there's the dome and there's an inner dome. Workmen from when that was built would sign their names not all of them, but there are all kinds of signatures and names and dates there that are still, they've still kept up way up where people really were not going to see them. And now research, you did a lot of research in this. Where do you go to start researching things?
Well, you know, I do refer to books that have been written already about the Gateway Arch. In particular, Bob Moore is a good friend of mine, and he's a retired park historian at the Gateway Arch, and he wrote a magnificent book on the Gateway Arch itself.
Now, do you go to libraries like the History Museum or the Mercantile Library, places like the Art Museum?
Yes. We have a great array of repositories of information and knowledge and books, and so I do avail myself of those institutions. In case in point, with the Cathedral Basilica, I reviewed materials at the Mercantile Library to see over the years the St. Louis Globe Democrat photographic collection to see what events happened in the Cathedral Basilica that were of note that they recorded. And it was fascinating to take a travel through time through that their lens.
Now, of course it is. It is to get that, to see that, and be able to utilize these things. We're very lucky to have all of these archives in St. Louis. Our riverfront is changing. It's changing all the time. I mean, even right the recent changes. Now, what are your predictions, John Gunther, architect and author, who is our guest? What's to come, say, in the next 25 to 50 years or so on the riverfront and downtown in general? What do you think is going to happen next?
Well, actually, you know, it's interesting. There's been talk of engaging the east side of the river, and that was an idea that was originally proposed in the original competition. And so it will be fascinating to see how the east side of the river might engage with the arch park grounds as well. So I await that anxiously. I would point out, too, by the way, on the east side, the Malcolm Martin Memorial Park has been there since 2009, and it's a fascinating design with a fountain. Unfortunately, I don't believe it's working right now, but when it was working, it rose to 630 feet in height, the same as the Gateway Arch, and it's due east of that. And so a really beautiful site and a beautiful place to take in a view of the downtown St. Louis and the Gateway Arch from its elevated platform.
It was like a geyser going up in the air.
Exactly right.
It's been off for a long time. Yeah, not too long ago, I wanted to get a look at the arch grounds, and I had a very hard time getting to it. So many streets are closed off from downtown, and parking is so hard, and walking there is so distant. Have you had that problem, or do you know like where you should go?
I've been fairly lucky in finding some street spaces, parking spaces, not too far away from the main entrance, which is now facing to the west to the old courthouse.
Sure. All right. Yeah, so search around, but it's not easy.
Search around.
Well, now, we're going to go out on Lindell in just a couple of minutes, take a short break here, where you have John Gunther, architect, author, two books. We're talking about the Gateway Arch and the Cathedral Basilica of St. Louis. I will go inside the Cathedral Basilica in St. Louis on St. Louis's station, KMOX. My name is Johnny Rabbit. I'm so glad you're here. Welcome and good morning. Rabbit, good morning from KMOX 723 right now. Wow, we're talking to John Gunther. He is really a great collector of materials about St. Louis, the Cathedral Basilica of St. Louis, like your Gateway Arch book, helps us to connect the dots, leading us from way back in the past to the present and into the future. Now, for anyone who might be confused, your book on the new cathedral on Lindell, not the old cathedral downtown. John, when did construction start on the Cathedral Basilica, and is it finished?
Yes, it began in 1907, and a superstructure was completed in 1914. So it took 7 years to create, to build that superstructure, what you see today. But it has an ongoing life, if you will, with the magnificent cathedral mosaics, glass tesserae mosaics, that took about 76 years to complete from that point forward. And so in 1988, the last mosaics were installed. In terms of completion, I would say there's always the ongoing maintenance and upkeep and some improvements that continue throughout the years. And so there will be continued work there as well. But for all intents and purposes, it's complete.
Well, I assume you have counted all those mosaics. About how many are there? There are more mosaics in the Cathedral Basilica than anywhere else in the Western Hemisphere. How many do you think there are?
Well, as a matter of fact, there are 83,000 square feet.
I knew you'd know.
And they have about 500 pieces per square foot. So when you do the math, that's about 45.1 million pieces of glass tesserae. And what's even more amazing is the artists who designed and fabricated and then created these mosaics. They chose from 7,000 shades of colored glass and 200 different shades of 24-karat glass mosaics. So it's really an amazing accomplishment. And I would point out, too, it's a Byzantine style of mosaics. And that in doing so, as the artisans would embed them and adhere them to the surfaces within the cathedral, they would angle the individual facets of the glass so that they catch the light beautifully and sparkle.
Very interesting. Yeah. Byzantine style, that's the interior. What's the exterior? That's a different style of architecture.
It's a combination of a Romanesque exterior with its great round arches and a Byzantine interior with its great domes. And that was per Archbishop Glennon's desire to have that style of architecture.
So there are three domes. I think the highest one is about 227 feet.
Mm-hmm, yes.
And then there are two lower domes than that. Was all of the work done by St. Louis companies, the mosaic work, do you know?
Well, as a matter of fact, it was done by Ravenna Mosaics, Inc., and that was founded by Emil Fry Sr., who founded the Emil Fry Art Glass Company. And so he emigrated to the United States, to St. Louis from Germany. And as this building was being completed and the Archbishop wanted to work with more local firms, he, in the Byzantine style, Emil Fry Sr. came to propose that he could do this work and in association with Poole and Wagner from Germany as well. And they had amazing artisans there. And so together they formed this company to install these beautiful mosaics over this long time period.
The cathedral, everybody knows where it is, but what was there before? Do you have any idea? Have you ever seen any pictures of what was on that property?
Well, I have not been able to find any existing buildings on the site prior to that, to their establishment of the cathedral. They did create a temporary a chapel to serve until the cathedral could be completed as we know it today. So that was in the northeast corner of the site. And also the rectory was there as well, but they were both viewed as temporary as the architects proceeded with the design.
Now, these books don't just happen. You don't just sit down at your computer or typewriter and just write it out and that's it. It takes a lot of work and a lot of time. How much time do you have to put in on a book like the book about the Basilica?
Well, I say it technically was 2 years and 4 months, but it was also a lifetime.
Sure.
Because I've been blessed with knowing a great many people involved with the Cathedral Basilica over my lifetime as an architect, and they were most generous in sharing their knowledge and research as well. So Nicholas Fry, Emil Fry Studios, fifth generation, has done a great deal of research on this building and its mosaics, and he was very, very helpful. I would also point out, too, in terms of the research, the Archdiocese of St. Louis Archives and Rita Shergan, she pulled out amazing amounts of original documents, which I was allowed to pour through and see firsthand these various documents, to read them, hold them in my hands, and incorporate them into the book.
Those are the books. That's John Gunther, the architect, the author of those books. And today, where are you going to be this afternoon between 2 to 3?
I will be at the old courthouse giving a talk on the Gateway Arch book.
Hey, great. John Gunter, thank you very, very much for being with us in KMOX at your service this morning. Have a great day, and I hope a lot of people come to see you this afternoon.
Thank you so much. Take care.
You too. It's 7:30 in St. Louis. This is Johnny Rabbit. It's at your service on KMOX, AM and FM. So Johnny Rabbit, we're at your service here this Sunday morning.
Why does it feel like nobody really gives us the inside scoop? Join us on The Powers That Be, the podcast where insiders from Puck break down who has influence, how they use it, and what it actually means for you. New episodes every weekday. Listen to The Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.
In St. Louis, it's 25 minutes until 8. Our next conversation is with Peter Mayer, a name you know. He has played an important role in the year, really unlike any other broadcaster from St. Louis, by being a White House correspondent. Good morning, Peter Mayer.
Well, good morning, Johnny. As I have been listening this morning, and I listen to KMOX a lot, even though I live in the Washington area, I listen online. It's just a reminder of how I wish we had a station of the quality of the Voice of St. Louis here in Washington. It's just kind of a desert when it comes to quality radio. So,
wow, that's nice.
Great interview with John Gunther this morning.
Well, thank you. No, I thought WTOP was a station that would be like KMOX.
Well, it's an all news and talk station. I'm sorry, it's an all news station, very tightly formatted, not a talk station.
Yeah.
You know, with traffic every 10 minutes, 24 hours a day.
Oh, yeah.
It's a great radio station. It really is. But it's not KMOX. Maybe I'm just a hometowner and I'm you know, I grew up with it. So there you go.
Now you grew up in Granite City?
I did indeed. Proud to have grown up in Granite City. It's a very big part of me. And through the years, as I've covered presidents from Jimmy Carter to Barack Obama, when I sat down at my typewriter at first and then, of course, my laptop or my typing on an iPhone, I thought, what do the people in Granite City want to know about this story before I sign off with my name?
Yep. Needring House Grade School, am I right?
That's right.
Coolidge Junior High?
Yep. Oh, boy, you've done your homework.
Granite City High?
Yes, sir. Granite City Warriors.
Let's see. You were with the paper there, weren't you? The Eagle Scout?
Well, the paper was the High World.
What was the Eagle Scout? What, was that the yearbook?
I was an Eagle Scout. I don't know what the yearbook was. I think the yearbook was called The Warrior.
Oh, The Warrior. Okay. Now, wait, yeah. You went then off to Southern Illinois University, Edwardsville.
Exactly. Yeah, I was in, believe it or not, I was in the very first class of mass communications majors at SIU Edwardsville, and among my classmates was the late Terry Gainey. My dear friend. We gathered with Senator McCaskill and a number of post-dispatch veterans to remember Terry at a celebration of his life just a few weeks ago, when, of course, we also saw you and Mrs. Rabbit.
That's right. Had a very nice time. And that was kind of quite a program they did at the Piper Palm House. A good testimonial to Terry Gainey.
Now, yeah.
What did you decide? When did you decide? What did you decide at a career? Was radio your first idea, or do you have any other career plans?
But when I was about 8 years old, I decided I wanted to be a newspaper reporter.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why. No one in my family was in the journalism business. My dear father was an optometrist in Granite City, and my mom grew up in Madison, Illinois, and in Granite City is where she moved after they got married. So I just liked telling people things that they didn't know, even when I was a little kid.
Oh, that's
and
great.
I had a little make-believe newspaper, and then later on, somebody gave me a little battery-powered tape recorder as a gift, and I just loved doing it.
Now, what about in those very early days? Who did you listen to on the radio? Did you have some from local or network people or area people that you really liked to emulate or be like?
Well, as you know, I had a lot of idols on KMOX. My mom and dad took me to a home show at Kiel when I was a little boy, and I met Rex Davis.
Oh, yeah.
The man who always signed off by saying, "So today's news shapes tomorrow."
That's right.
And Rex recorded a little 78 radio, 78 record with people there, I guess especially kids. And I still have it mounted on a shelf, and it says KMOX, the Voice of St. Louis, on it.
That's great.
I like to listen to Rex and John Butler and then Jim Butler. And then later, my real idol became Bob Hardy.
Sure.
People. Hey, and you.
thank you. That's very nice, Peter Murray, to put me into all of those people. And then how did you get into radio? What was your thing? You wanted to be a newspaper reporter, but then radio. How did it happen?
Boy, I didn't know we were going to do This Is Your Life this morning,
of course.
Johnny. A couple of things. First of all, after the assassination of President Kennedy, I lived across the street from the public park in Granite City, Wilson Park. Mm-hmm. And there was a service, a memorial service for President Kennedy. I can still picture it right on the green lawn of the front of the park there. And one of my idols, a newspaper reporter for the twice weekly Granite City Press Record, was there taking notes and taking pictures. And also there was a man from the local radio station, WGNU in Granite City, Illinois, owned by Chuck Norman.
Sure.
And this was Bob Baker, who I think you probably remember.
Oh, of course,
and,
I do.
You know, he was the man about town for WGNU. And I looked over there, and I was just a kid, and I thought, this is going on right now, and this news is going out immediately. The term immediacy of radio didn't occur to me at my young age, but there was Bob on the air, and there was the guy from the Granite City paper, and it was going to be a number of days before people saw
right.
what he was reporting. So, you know, it occurred to me that might be a possibility. And then in 1964, I was in the Boy Scouts, and I was the news reporter for the troop that went to the Jamboree and Valley Forge, Pennsylvania. And I, what a break for a kid who was like 14 years old. And I sent my reports back by United States mail, not by satellite or online, which didn't exist then.
Right.
By U.S. mail, I sent reports to the Granite City Press Record and little reel-to-reel recordings of interviews and reports that I did with my voice that probably hadn't quite changed to WGNU. And a couple of years later, I get a call from WGNU. I was in my mom's kitchen when the phone rang, and they said, hey, we're looking for somebody to do a high school radio show. How would you like to do this? And, hey, I made $4 a week.
That's great. That's pretty good. This is a great way to start. Start very small and build up. And then the White House correspondent thing, when did you start that?
Well, after working in Granite City and through college, I was really got a great break in college when I was hired by WIBV in Belleville, which had just an incredible news department and a great radio station led by a man, Norman Greenberg, who is still a dear friend of mine and lives in the Belleville area and is just celebrated not long ago his 90th birthday. And so I worked at WIBV, and then from there I went on to a station in Nashville, and my big break came in Atlanta, WSB Radio, one of the great radio stations in the country.
Sure.
And I covered a little-known politician there, Jimmy Carter.
Ah.
And the Mutual Radio Network, when Carter was elected, was looking for someone familiar with him, and I always wanted to get to Washington, Johnny, and so Jimmy was my ticket to Washington, and I covered him and subsequent presidents, again, up until Obama. I worked at Mutual Radio until it went out of business in 1998, and I walked out the door of that and right into the front door of CBS News.
Yeah, great.
And was there, you know, for the next nearly 20 years. And, of course, sadly, in a very misguided corporate decision that I can't denigrate enough, as you well know at KMOX, CBS Radio News is going to go out of business next month.
May 22nd is the date, I'm told. Why? Do you have any idea why they're doing that?
You know, look, it comes down to the almighty buck.
Yeah.
And that's why.
But they have 700 stations in their network. It just doesn't seem like it. I don't understand it at all.
It makes no sense. 700 stations, 700 great radio stations, among the first and foremost, KMOX. And, you know, again, I just can't tell you how disgusted I am about this. But sadly, when the new company, Paramount Skydance, whatever they are calling themselves today, I just kind of envisioned, and a couple of people told me I was wrong, but I said, you know, they're going to come in and look at the radio news corner of the newsroom, the part of the company that really was the genesis of what they're looking at CBS. That's where it all started, with even before Edward R. Murrow and Walter Cronkite and so many other greats through the years. I felt that these people who just know nothing about radio were going to look at that corner of the newsroom and say, old media, let's save money.
Yeah.
And they did.
They did.
And they just came in, and I can't begin to tell you how heartbroken the staff is there.
Oh, I guess.
You know, these are people who just don't come in and punch a time card every day. These are people who are dedicated broadcast journalists. That radio news department has won so many coveted awards, Edward R. Murrow Awards and others through the years. It's not all about awards, but it's the product that you hear every hour when that bong goes off on KMOX and so many other stations all over the country.
Peter Mayer, thank you for being here. If you can stick around, we got a few more things to talk about, if you will.
Sure.
You're doing something special today, aren't you?
I'm doing a couple of things special today. So, yeah, we can talk about that.
Okay,
too.
Great. Peter Mayer, and this is Johnny Rabbit. We're on KMOX at your service. That's Johnny Rabbit. It's 10 minutes until 8 o'clock.
Life can feel overwhelming, but you don't have to go through it alone. On my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, I share openly and vulnerably about everything life brings us and what we can learn by living with our hearts a little bit more open. Every Friday, a new episode brings you a new story with topics on self-care, motherhood, healing, and more. You are enough, just the way you are. This podcast is a reminder of that. Follow and listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.
We're talking to Peter Mayer, a well-known voice of St. Louis. And Peter, earlier, I don't want to forget this. You mentioned stations like we have. When I came in, I saw these Edward R. Murrow Awards on the wall here. Quite an honor. And how about you? You, I believe, are a recipient of an Edward R. Murrow Award.
More than one, but we don't need to get into
more
that.
More than
much,
one? How do you? Okay. I'm sure you have a lot of other awards as well. And I understand some of the collections are in museums now.
Yeah, you know, I through the years, I just picked up so much memorabilia. And Mrs. Mayer has said, you know, we've taught, you know, you and I and our wives have talked about all of our accumulations.
That's true.
And our wives are on a crusade to have us, you know, do something about it. Excuse me. We don't want to leave our kids saddled with all of these things. And it's something that so many people of a certain age discuss, Johnny.
That's true.
And so, yes, I have donated things to the George H.W. Bush Presidential Museum in Texas. I had some recordings of interviews that I did with President Bush, most notably one that I did with him on the 25th anniversary of the Reagan assassination, when he very movingly recounted to me what was going through his mind when he was notified that President Reagan had been shot.
Wow.
And so I donated that to that museum. And then I had all kinds of trinkets from covering President Clinton, and I donated those to the Clinton Presidential Library in Little Rock.
That is really terrific. Well, now, when did you leave CBS?
I left in, 10 years ago.
Oh, my gosh.
10 years ago, yeah.
Have things changed a lot from, I mean, I guess there's still a White House correspondent. I don't even know.
Yeah, they've got a couple of people covering the White House, and the TV people also pitch in from the TV side of CBS. And they report, too.
Yeah. Now, 10 years ago, what have you been doing all this time?
Well, a lot of time with cherished grandchildren.
Sure.
And I also have written a book that is now with a publisher, and I expect to get the edited version of it back next week.
Oh, great. Now, is this a book going to be, what is it about?
Well, it's about my life growing up in Granite City and about my career and the presidents who I covered and some of the characters who I covered in Illinois politics, local politics in St. Clair County, and all the way up to the White House.
What presidents have you covered?
From Jimmy Carter to Barack Obama. So I covered Presidents Carter, Reagan, Bush 1, Bush 41, George H.W., and Bill Clinton, and then the son of President Bush, George W., and Barack Obama. So a lot of history. I, you know, never thought that I would cover a president and the son of a president. Never happened since the Adamses. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the history of witnessing Barack Obama's announcement in Springfield on a very cold day when he announced officially announced his presidential candidacy and covered him, you know, the night that he proclaimed victory in Grant Park in Chicago, and then was just privileged to cover all of these men. They all respected the White House and you know, never would have desecrated the White House by tearing down the East Wing and building a gaudy plans for a gaudy ballroom. You know, these were all men who, you know, had political differences.
Mm-hmm. So of course,
found ways to get along too through the years.
Well, now you said you're doing a couple of things today. I guess you do a lot of lecturing and talks and other things, similar things, teaching possibly.
I have taught a bit through the years. You know, just sort of, I always call myself an adjunct professor. So I've been at the George Washington University here and American University talking to classes, and back at SIU Edwardsville a couple of times. So that's fun. But I think my shelf life on that is probably expiring.
Oh, too, that's not right. What about advice for somebody? I want to get in like you did. I want to get into radio. What was your advice to those people?
Boy, you know, it's really difficult these days to give that advice. Through the years, I've always said, and I know you have too, you know, find a WIBV like in Belleville, which doesn't exist anymore the way it did then. Or, you know, people would gravitate, if they went to the University of Missouri, they'd work at a station in Columbia for a while. Or there was a powerhouse little radio station in Moberly, Missouri, that had a great news department, and people would go there. Nowadays, those stations don't exist.
Mm-hmm, you're right.
So I counsel kids to get a good internship somewhere. Get your foot in the door with an internship at a radio or TV station. This past summer, an organization here in the area asked me to mentor a young man who wants to get into TV. Hmm. And he had an internship at the ABC TV station here in D.C. What an opportunity.
Yeah, you're right.
But he needed some advice on basically relationships with producers and other reporters.
Sure.
And how to deal with interview subjects and things like that.
And he found you.
It was just so much fun to give him that advice.
Well, Peter Mayer, thank you. Thank you for our conversation today, and I hope to talk to you again soon.
Thank you for our friendship, our enduring friendship, Johnny, and looking forward to seeing you and Gwen the next time we're in town. And God bless you. Thanks a million for what you do all these years.
Thank you, Peter. This is Johnny Rabbit at your service.
Hey, it's Jen Hatmaker. Here's what I've learned in midlife. Joy isn't the reward you earn after all the work is done. Joy is the work. That's what this new series on For the Love is all about. The sacred, yes. It's choosing delight, rest, and pleasure on purpose. Because saying yes to yourself, that's the thing that finally lets you fill your table with everybody else. Come find your sacred yes with me. Follow and listen to For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.